From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Nearly 4 years ago, the U.S. withdrew from Afghanistan, ending America's longest war. And in that time, hundreds of thousands of Afghans, many of whom worked with the U.S. government, relocated to the United States to escape retribution under Taliban rule. Sacramento has long been home to one of the largest Afghan populations in the country. But this latest wave of refugees is reeling from the Trump administration, which has withdrawn legal protections and erected barriers to permanent residency, threatening their future in their adopted home. CalMatters Capital reporter Alexi Kossoff spoke with Afghans in California and joins us with those conversations. And a note, CalMatters is a nonprofit newsroom that partners with public media stations across the state. Hey, Alexi.
Hi there. Good to be with you.
So before we dive into these personal stories, let's start off with a little primer and go back to August of 2021 and the U.S. withdrawal in Afghanistan. What options were offered to Afghans vulnerable under Taliban rule who wanted to relocate to the United States?
Well, a lot of this situation, frankly, is a result of the fact that the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan was so chaotic.
And deadly.
And yeah, absolutely. There was an agreement with the Taliban for the U.S. to pull out, but things fell apart much more quickly than the U.S. anticipated. There was this massive airlift of more than 100,000 people out of Kabul in the final weeks. And as a result, a lot of people, Afghans who had worked with the U.S. government in Afghanistan or worked with the U.S. military in Afghanistan, were brought to the U.S. without the sort of normal processing that happens for refugees. And so they were here with humanitarian parole, trying to apply for asylum, you know, looking for legal paths to be able to stay. And so they were here, they were brought here, but they didn't have the kind of regular protections that refugees would have. And so a lot of people have been trying to work through that system. And now, as the Trump administration has cracked down, suddenly find themselves in this much more vulnerable position than they ever anticipated.
When it comes to this time span of nearly 4 years, how many Afghans arrived in the United States?
Yeah, so, I mean, even after the U.S. left Afghanistan, it actually continued to work to bring people to the U.S. who had worked with the American government in Afghanistan. So the Biden administration estimated that by the time President Biden left office, they had brought about 200,000 Afghans to the U.S. in under 4 years. And more of them ended up in California than anywhere else. This has long been a place that where Afghans have come all the way back to the end of the 1970s when there was the Soviet war in Afghanistan. And Sacramento actually has the largest Afghan immigrant population in the entire country. And then you also have big populations in Fremont, in LA, San Diego, Stockton. So there's tens of thousands of people who've arrived in just the past few years who are now living in California.
And I would imagine for those who relocated within the last 4 years, many probably had family members that lived in California. So that would probably be why they came to California.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, there's a whole community here, and some people do have connections, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't. You know, a lot of people came here and they were reliant on this sort of refugee resettlement system that the U.S. has had for decades, where, you know, you're provided financial support to get on your feet and a work permit so that you can start your life here. And in January, President Trump signed an executive order that ended refugee resettlement. It pulled the funding. And so a lot of these organizations have been scrambling to, you know, help people who are already here keep their lives afloat, not to mention all of the people who are still stuck abroad that those people are trying to bring here, family members, parents, children, spouses who are still stuck abroad.
When did you start working on this story?
You know, it's something I've been thinking about for several months. And I, you know, slowly worked on it over the course of time. I mean, I wanted to connect with people within the community and earn their trust so that, you know, they would feel comfortable sharing their stories with me. And I'm very grateful that several of them did, but they did so, you know, without their names attached anonymously in the article because they are worried about the fact that if they are not allowed to stay here in the U.S., that if they do ultimately have to go back to Afghanistan, that they would be targeted by the Taliban. I mean, some of them shared experiences even in those chaotic final days trying to leave Kabul, that their apartments were broken into, they had things taken, the Taliban came and knocked on their door because they already knew they already had lists of people that they knew were working with U.S. government agencies in Afghanistan or with the military.
You bring up a really important point. This, of course, is tied to politics. You are a Capitol reporter, but this story is different. Help listeners understand the delicateness of this reporting.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of why I started thinking about this as well is because of the helplessness of California to do anything about it. You know, there were bills earlier this session that I was tracking that were trying to pour more resources into helping this community to try and fill that gap that the, you know, federal government had left by pulling, you know, funding. But unfortunately, California is in a deficit. It doesn't have extra tens of millions of dollars laying around to provide legal aid or other resources. So that just got me started thinking about, okay, well, what's a personal way that, you know, we can tell the story then? And you know, what really emerged from these conversations was the fear. I mean, that's the biggest thing, the fear and the sense of betrayal from so many people in this community who did work for a long time with the U.S. and Afghanistan to help, you know, with this mission of rebuilding democracy in Afghanistan. And, you know, as a result, they were essentially then enemies of the Taliban when the Taliban came back to power. And so they came here to start over. You know, they didn't want to leave Afghanistan. They wanted to stay there and have their lives there. And now they feel like they've been abandoned after being given the second chance. So it's just a lot of pain that people are experiencing. And, you know, it's really sad to hear because these are people who, you know, helped the U.S. and put their lives on the line.
One of those people who spoke with you goes by the name of Marwa in your reporting. Tell us about her.
Yeah, so Marwa is a family nickname, and she is a woman I spoke to who had worked with the U.S. In Afghanistan with the Drug Enforcement Administration. And so as a result, during that evacuation of Kabul, she was sent to the airport to help with that evacuation process and told, don't bring anything with you. And she had three young children. She only brought her infant son with her because she was still breastfeeding him, but left her other two children expecting they would be sent for later on. And she was stuck at that airport for days working, helping with this evacuation, and could not get her children inside. You know, the Taliban was having checkpoints. The U.S. military was having checkpoints. It was hard to get people through. It was dangerous. There was, you know, gunfire. And she tried multiple times. And ultimately, she was shoved onto a plane and evacuated from the country with nothing but her infant son. And I mean, it's very sad. She's been trying for nearly 4 years now to get her children here to the U.S. And it's been a very difficult process, a lot of bureaucracy. Finally, in January, she thought that they were going to be scheduled on a flight to come here. And on January 20th, President Trump signed that executive order that ended those family reunification flights. And she doesn't have a way to bring them here now. So suddenly, she's stuck here. She doesn't feel like she can go back to Afghanistan or she'll be targeted. And she can't bring her children here. And, you know, she's just devastated. I mean, she's just been separated from them now for 4 years, watching them grow up basically by FaceTime.
Does any of her immediate family still live in Afghanistan, or were they able to escape?
So some of her family did leave the country immediately. Some of her siblings, her mother and her children, they went to Pakistan, but they were trying to come to the U.S. and they could never quite get to the U.S. Their visas in Pakistan expired, and, you know, most of them had to go back to Afghanistan, except for her children, because she was able to finally get this, you know, permission for them to come to the U.S. that was, you know, ultimately canceled. So her family's kind of separated. Some are in Pakistan, some are in Afghanistan. And her father was never able to leave Afghanistan. The Taliban took his passport and he was actually killed a couple of years ago. So, you know, this is sort of she sort of sees that as a message to her, and she's very concerned about if she goes back, then what the consequences mm-hmm. could be.
I go back to that flight that was canceled on Inauguration Day, and I remember we had a nonprofit, Opening Doors, on our show. You interviewed them as well, and they told us that there was a flight scheduled of Afghan refugees that were going to come to the Sacramento area. That flight was canceled following that executive order on Inauguration Day. What was President Trump's reasoning for this executive action?
I mean, this is part of his general crackdown on immigration in the U.S. And, you know, he does not see a priority here in continuing to do what is essentially humanitarian work, right? There's not necessarily the kind of strategic benefit that, you know, Trump approaches foreign policy with. And, you know, the Biden administration had continued to do this, had continued to bring people here as sort of the idea was we're fulfilling a promise as the U.S. to these people who were allies to us abroad. And the Trump administration has taken a very different focus. They think some of these people are dangerous and don't want them here in the U.S. And so it's just it's a different mindset about what the U.S. owes Afghans, frankly.
So that withdrawal was under the Biden administration, of course. But what was the Trump administration's stance on the war in Afghanistan during his first term in office?
Right. I mean, this is a really complicated thing because President Trump was actually the one who started the talks with the Taliban that led to the U.S. eventually withdrawing. They came to this agreement and President Biden upheld that agreement and did follow through on the withdrawal. And that withdrawal went very poorly. Unfortunately, American soldiers died. And, you know, we had this chaotic airlift and all of these lingering consequences. Right. But it was, you know, a foreign policy decision spanning two administrations. And so it is very interesting here now to have the Trump administration back in power and they're not sort of following through on, you know, dealing with a mess that was in part created by the foreign policy from his first term.
How does Mara feel about the 2021 withdrawal?
I mean, she's, you know, it's a lot of things. She's very angry about the way that things went with this deal with the Taliban. She's angry at the Trump administration for making that deal with the Taliban and then abandoning people like her now. She is regretful that she listened to the rules not to bring her children with her to the airport. I mean, she thinks every day, what if I had just brought them with me? You know, I mean, in the saddest moment in our conversation, she said sometimes she feels suicidal because, you know, she just doesn't know if she's ever going to be able to hold her children again. So it's this terrible range of emotions. And at the same time, she's here in the U.S. Her youngest child is now about 4 years old. She has to take care of him and she has to be there for him. And she's still trying to be a mother for him and rebuild her life here. So she's balancing a lot. And, you know, it's very difficult for her.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with CalMatters reporter Alexi Kossoff about the status of Afghan refugees in California, many of whom who aided the United States during the war, who are facing a shaky future under the Trump administration. Is this an issue that falls easily along political lines? Are Republicans generally in support of the Trump administration on this, even when it comes to people who are allies of the U.S. government during a war?
I don't know that I've seen public polling around this, but I think one thing that has been very interesting is there's a lot of groups of veterans that have started to organize and speak out to try and help people who worked with them, you know, during the war and who are still stuck in Afghanistan or who have family stuck in Afghanistan. And, you know, that's a group that I imagine is quite politically mixed. And they've been some of the most vocal advocates on the federal level for trying to get action to resolve this problem. And so, I there is maybe some hope in that sense that, you know, you have this sympathetic constituency, veterans, that is really a strong voice on this. But other than that, it's not something that's gotten a tremendous amount of attention in Congress. I mean, there's just so much going on with the start of the Trump administration. Even the Democrats who have been raising alarms about it and asking officials during hearings if they're going to, you know, change policies or whatever. I mean, it just hasn't really broken through in a big way in kind of the national picture.
Yeah. And there's a wide range of resistance from California Democratic leaders against the Trump administration, dozens of lawsuits. There's a lot that's happening, and it's a very fluid situation. What resources are actually available for Afghan refugees in California? Does the state offer support or funding? Because you mentioned that there were conversations taking place at the start of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the state definitely has a role that it plays as well. It has a whole program, you know, it helps manage sort of these resettlement services for Afghans and other people, you know, Ukrainians and people from other countries as well. But most of that funding comes from the federal government. So again, it's all kind of uncertain what the long-term future is. And the California did get sort of hundreds of millions of dollars extra money under the Biden administration to specifically support Afghan immigrants. So they sort of handed out as many of those grants as they could before Trump took office, worried that that money might be clawed back. And now you still have organizations like Opening Doors that are, you know, using those resources to try and help people, because it's sort of amazing. There are still people who are arriving, even though the Trump administration has shut down these federal programs. There were people who managed to get visas approved before the Trump administration shut down refugee resettlement programs. And so they can technically still come if they can pay their own way. And so there have been people who've managed to make it here, and groups like Opening Doors and other, you know, nonprofits like that are, you know, trying to then pull together resources from the state and other places to continue to support those people.
Once those visas expire, are they at risk of being deported?
So some of the biggest challenges right now for people, there are, you know, people came in with so many different kinds of legal statuses. Some people had visas, but some people only had a humanitarian parole, which is a short-term thing. They might be applying for asylum now and not have heard yet. And there are people who then also came under what's called temporary protected status, which is sort of the most vulnerable status of all, because that has now been canceled by the Trump administration. So without getting into too many of the details, you know, it's just to say that there's thousands of people who have all different kinds of situations. But the overall picture is that the Trump administration has shut down almost every single door that's available to them.
Yeah, it's important to lay that out, as you just did. Each story of asylum or refugee status, legal protections is unique. The circumstances for coming here as well. But finally, just as a reporter, what did a story like Mara's teach you?
I mean, you know, first of all, just very grateful to her for sharing it. I mean, I think, I think it's so easy sometimes to feel very disconnected from things that are happening all around the world. Even as someone who's an avid news consumer, you know, you might read about international news and not be able to picture the realities of it. And so to be able to spend, you know, many hours with Marwa and talk to her and have her share her story, and not just her story of coming here, but also what her life was like, you know, in Afghanistan before that, and what she dealt with as a woman there, and how she, you know, came up in this time of, you know, breaking barriers as a woman in the workforce and things like that. You know, it was just very powerful to be able to understand, you know, the situation there in a much more personal way.
Alexei, thanks for joining us and sharing your reporting.
Thank you very much.
That is CalMatters reporter Alexei Kossoff discussing the status of Afghan refugees in California, many of whom helped the United States during the war, who are facing a shaky future under the Trump administration and at risk of returning to the Taliban. Up next, the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta is littered with abandoned boats. We'll learn about the dangers these vessels pose and what's being done to remove them. You're listening to Inside on Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.